Blog Talk Radio.
Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Welcome to Don't Give Up Radio. I am excited to bring this broadcast to you this evening. We have a wonderful guest who is speaking to us not only from a place of knowledge, but also from a place of experience. She is motivational speaker, author, and community leader, and I also am proud to call her friend. Herlene Williams and Carr is here to talk with us today, definitely from her book, What You Say Matters, which is a skill and a tool that we all can learn from, but particularly parents and in their relationship with their children. And I know, having three in their 20s, that it's a skill that you need all the way through, from toddler to teen to 20s and beyond. You need to know how to communicate and understand that what you say definitely matters in the molding and the development of your children. So, Herlene, thank you so much for being on the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Jackie, for having me.
Well, it's an honor. It's an honor. I had the privilege of seeing you on stage live just about a month ago, and I was completely blown away at your contribution. That's the best word I can give, because you really, more than just spoke, you really imparted, you deposited into the lives of the women in that room, and I'm looking forward to that to transpire here within our broadcast tonight.
Yes, definitely.
So listen, let's get right on into it. I like to take some time and find out a bit about my guests and their past, and I believe all these things help to formulate who we are today. And so I wanted to get a sense of who the young woman was. Who was the young girl, the teenager growing up? If I was to meet you back then, what would I see, both good and bad, if there's such a definition?
I think you would have met an eager overachiever, looking to please everybody. So in some ways that was good, and in many ways that was bad.
Mm-hmm. It definitely can be. And, you know, you used two very key words there, overachiever and looking to please. And already, I could definitely have fallen into both of, I did fall into both of those categories growing up. I only child, I talk about that on the show quite a bit. Single mom, very authoritative, from the island, you know, no messing around, and high standards of what she expected of me. And so that led into the overachiever piece, but it also very much helped to develop this need to please mm-hmm. others, and not necessarily discerning when it's right or not right to do that. So tell me a little bit more about your experience with that growing up.
Well, I'm one of five, so I'm the fourth girl, and I came right before the boy. So I had to find my place within the household, trying to measure up to the older sisters and then trying to stand out from the boy. So it made it a little complicated to figure out how can I shine in my parents' eyes. Being devout Christians, in a small rural community, it was just very challenging. Everybody knew everybody, so you had to always shine in the outside, and then compiled with trying to fit in on the inside. So yet beautiful, I wouldn't trade it for nothing in the world. I'm originally from South Carolina, so I wouldn't trade it for nothing.
All right. That's good to know. That's good to know, especially in hindsight when we look back. We do see the areas that we were developed and made stronger, but that always doesn't feel like that when we're going through it, when we're in the making. And so your book, you know, What You Say Matters, and I just thought to myself, I wondered, you know, growing up in a Christian home, having, you know, that nice foundation there, but what were some of the words that were spoken over you, to you, that may have formed you and developed your belief system about yourself?
I think what stood out to me most was, don't let anybody make a fool out of you. And that may have been very profound to my mother, but it was very vague to me. I didn't have the details. What did that mean? What does that look like? How do I know that I was being made a fool of? So that was wondering and guessing the majority of my life. There was other times where she would say, wear lipstick. I put on earrings. She thought she was telling me to enhance my beauty because I was beautiful, but she left out those words, you are beautiful. So I heard, add to yourself because you needed it. So it was all about perspective, and more of what you say really does matter. Choose your words carefully and making sure that you're getting your true perspective across.
Yes. Yeah. Both of those things hit me very strongly. It's interesting. Growing up as a little girls, little boys, you want to hear words of affirmation, and you want to know how your parents feel about you. You want to hear the words, I love you, and hear them tell you that you're smart or beautiful or pretty. I remember once saying to my mom, you know, you never, you know, told me that I'm pretty. You never, you know, said anything about that. And she says, well, of course you're pretty. I'm beautiful. So of course you're pretty, right? So in her mind, it was like what you're saying. It's this, you know, how could you think otherwise? But
right.
I didn't have any gauge. So therefore, I just assumed that it meant that she didn't think I was. And what's interesting about what you're saying also is this term that we use in our society called common sense.
Yeah.
And we assume that there is a common sense, that everyone knows certain things, you know. And as I communicate with you, you just clearly understand what I mean. And I've come to the realization that there really isn't such a thing as a common sense. So what did you have to say along those lines there?
Exactly, exactly, exactly. Common sense is not so common. So it is the unspoken words that truly speak the volume. So, you know, so it's really, you have to be very strategic in your delivery. Because it was the unspoken words that she thought she was saying, but in my perspective, it was something totally different.
Yeah, and that perception, that misperception happens a lot between parent and child. And in fact, the movie Fences with Denzel Washington is coming out later, well, for Christmas. And, you know, my understanding of Fences is this whole communication gap between a father and a son, and everything that a father is doing to try to provide for this young man because he loves him, but the young man needing to hear that affirmation and just feeling like this man doesn't even like me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so this whole need for the communication piece is huge. So as you're growing up and there's these miscommunications that are happening, and we get into, you know, you get into your teen years, how did that start to impact you? What were some of the decisions that you started to make just because you misunderstood some things?
I got married at 21. And it was a very, it was a whirlwind relationship. We dated for 6 months, and definitely poor choice. Poor choice, but yet again, I would not trade the experience for nothing in the world. It truly made me who I am, and I got a beautiful daughter out of it. But it did lead to a poor decision. I married way too young to the wrong person.
Yeah. And I'm sure at the time you didn't think you were too young.
Oh, definitely not. I was ready. No matter what, and nobody but Jesus himself could have told me differently. And I'm sure he probably tried. But I was definitely going to get married at that time to that person no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's what led to my decision, though.
You know, I have a best friend who's no longer with me. She got married at 21 herself, and she lost her life in that relationship. She lost her life, and when we come back, we're going to talk to you more about what that relationship looked like for you and how the Lord was able to even transform your tears, though, into lessons that you're able to impart to others today.
Yeah.
I don't know how. It makes you so much stronger. It makes you so much wiser. Yeah. And you're so close to your dreams. And no mistake, no heartbreak can take away what you're meant to be.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
No mistake, no heartache can take away what you're meant to be. Sometimes when you're in the midst of it, you can't even see who God has designed you to be. You're just in a muddle, and you don't realize that you're actually a queen. You're actually a king. And that is who he has called us to be. But while we're in the midst of a bad decision or in the midst of a mistake, it doesn't feel that way. And so here we are. We have the pleasure of speaking with Herlene Ankar, who's author of What You Say Matters. And she was just confessing and sharing with us that she got married at a very young age of 21 and that the relationship itself was not a healthy one. So, Herlene, if you could take some time and talk to us about how soon into the marriage did you begin to see that this might have been not a good idea, and talk to us about what were some of the experiences you were facing.
Well, Jackie, the amazing thing was there were red flags before the marriage. And because I wanted it to be a certain thing, that's what I saw. So there were times where I remember he'd get so mad he ripped his shirt off. And I that should have been a red flag. That was run. There's an issue here. But I said, wow, he want me that much that he's, you know, that he gets so angry. Or, you know, he's so passionate about being with me, and so it gets him to that point. No, ladies, that's the red flag. That's a run, okay? So it was things like that where you saw the temper go from 0 to 10, you know, in a matter of 5 seconds. Then, you know, those are red flags.
So it sounds to me that... Yeah, so it sounds to me that abuse was definitely a part of your relationship. And there's, you know, 5 manifestations of abuse at least, which is, you know, the emotional, the physical, the financial, the sexual, the mental. And a lot of times we don't touch on some of these. So can you share a bit of what elements of abuse you started to face in this marriage?
It started out being rather controlling. Isolation early on, wanting to dominate the decisions, and then shortly thereafter, I'll say 2 to 3 months into the marriage, the abuse became physical. About 2 to 3 months into it is when the physical abuse came about. And then it was, I would say, psychological abuse of trying to put me down, maybe even verbal, in ways to make me second guess myself, make me second guess my decisions about things, you know. So definitely verbal abuse and physical abuse early on. But I was there for 6 years.
6 years. So, okay. So before, you know, you say, well, there's, you know, red flag, but you didn't run because you misinterpret what it means. But now you're in it, and you clearly see what it means. What are some of the reasons why you stay?
Leaving meant I wasn't enough. So I had to... I was still seeking to be enough. I was still seeking to fit in. I was still seeking to shine. So to shine, or at that time, my definition of success was appearing to have it all together. So in order for me to be accepted by my community or to be seen as successful, I needed to appear that I had it all together. So I couldn't have a marriage falling apart. I couldn't be a divorcee. You know, when the abuse started, I didn't have the child yet, so I wasn't successful in that area. So surely I couldn't prove people wrong that I got married too early. So I had to, in my mind.
You know, it's interesting because as you're talking, when we started, what you say matters. You know, it has a very conscious impact to it, but I'm also hearing this, what you say to yourself in your head matters because, you know, that whole conversation that you're having with yourself as to why you should stay in this, why you should remain taking a beating and taking the verbal abuse has a lot to do with your internal conversation that you were having with yourself. Were you aware enough at that time to realize that you were having a verbal conversation with yourself that was keeping you in the circumstance?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's book number two, Jackie.
Okay, so we won't rush ahead. but just from the experience that you were in at that moment, and you mentioned not even having a child yet, what was your thought pattern about bringing a child into the relationship?
Well, I thought success was having a husband, having a child, and having a career. That would make me successful. That would make me accepted. That would mean I was enough. So, by all means, I had to have this baby. So, which became a difficult task, but through prayer and through going to the doctor, I got my baby.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned, there's so much. Which question to ask first? So you mentioned prayer. How serious was faith in your life at this point in time in your relationship with the Lord?
I knew of Him. I attended church, but I was not consistent, and I was not remaining in position of a posture of receiving, and I wasn't still long enough to hear.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense, but I was aware I had a familiarity with Him. So I knew about prayer, but I did not study the Word, and I did not have a close relationship with God. Oftentimes we feel that if we just attend church that make us have a relationship. That is a relationship, but it's not a one that you would say you can truly say friend, or one that you can truly say you know him closer than a brother. You know, you can say yourself.
Yes, what I often say on this show is Romans 10:9-10, that if you confess with your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord and believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you will be saved. And that is the beginning, right? That is the open door access into the relationship that you're saying can be much deeper, much richer than any kind of a surface, just going to church and going through the motions, but really get into a relationship with the Lord. So at this point in time, it was just kind of superficial for you. And so your beautiful daughter comes into the picture. Does anything start to shift or change in terms of how you perceive the relationship and your next steps and movement?
That's when the light bulb went off that enough was enough. Mm-hmm. I was 4 months pregnant, and he tore the house down. Everything in it, he went down. And he almost hit me. And I said, to accidentally kill me, the result is still me dead.
Yeah.
I cannot take a chance.
Well said. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, because even though, you know, temper's flaring and he may not intend to hurt me, he just might mean to shut me up or might mean to intimidate me, but any way you put it, if I'm dead, I'm dead. So I'm not going to take the chance to stay around to find out what your intent is. So enough was enough.
And you made your way out the door?
Yes.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah. Now, that's usually the applause moment where everyone's cheering and they're like, oh, she did the right thing, and that's great. But being able to pick up the pieces and move forward is not always that easy, and usually depression comes in the way. Did you have any type of battle with that?
Depression? And
yeah.
I tried again for a couple of months with him.
Uh-huh. So the going back, I made a
mm-hmm.
mistake, or we can try again.
Yep. I need a father to help me raise this baby. I can't do it by myself. I just need somebody else's hands to be in the pot because he wasn't helping financially. She needed a daddy. She needed to have somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And once I saw those signs coming back, I said, oh, no, let it go. And I really had to let it go. Matter of fact, I was holding her, and he threw a flower pot at me. And it covered her in dirt. When I saw my baby covered in dirt, I said, okay, let it go. So, yeah,
okay.
So it wasn't just a one walk away and, oh, it was deliverance. No.
So how did you manage the bounce back or, you know, coping through the depression? What were some of the things you did to deal with that?
Well, with depression is a moment-by-moment thing. And it not only did it stem from the abuse and the failed marriage, but it also still stems from not being accepted, not understanding my place in my family line. And so through prayer, through meditation, spending time with myself, spending quiet time, that's how I battle depression. And it's not a one-day thing. It's moment-by-moment thing. The scripture, pray without ceasing, is real for me. It's not a Bible-toting, scripture-quoting thing. It's life in order to maintain my sanity. You know, I have to constantly be in prayer, and that's communication with God. So that's where that relationship goes deeper than just being familiar with. Being in that secret place, having that quiet time, that's where that relationship goes deeper for me.
The quiet time is so crucial. You know, many of us cannot even sit quiet for a minute or two. And when you see that you're in that place, that is an indicator that you're probably not making the best decisions for yourself from day to day. And many of us are just going and doing and doing. And on the outside, like you said earlier, you look fine. You have the facade to everyone. You've got the job and the house and the car, and you're doing great things. And so everyone thinks that internally you're wrapped up, and it's a beautiful world on the inside as it is on the outside. But until you learn how to sit in that quietness, in that still place, you really aren't going to be able to have the emotional and mental being that you need to move forward and propel. At least that's what I found to be true.
Right. Yep, you're spot on.
Well, I can say, Herlene, we're not even into your book yet, which we're going to do in the next segment, but you are definitely a survivor. I can say that already. And, you know, many of us are survivors, but we don't claim it. We don't own it. And what I really enjoy about you is that you step into the fact that you are a survivor and that you've learned from your lessons and that you can actually bring that to others. And the song that I'm going to play now, it's just hones in on that fact that God will take care of you. You know, here you were a single mom and you're thinking, I need this human father to be in the picture in order to take care of my daughter. And the father is saying, you know what, I've got you. I'm going to take care of you. So when we come back, we're going to find out for you, the listener, how what you say matters can impact your world and your life.
Do not dismay. What? Peace.
is here, no matter what. Yeah, girl, oh, it's true. God will take care. Oh, what may from day to day? Oh, God, God will take care of you.
No matter what
you're going through.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
You know, Herlene and I have a wonderful friend, Samira Germs, and one of her favorite sayings is, won't he do it? Won't he do it? So God is good, and he was able to bring you up and out of an abusive situation and help you to learn and glean from that. Glean from the abuse, glean from the depression in a way that allows you to be able to support others today. And I know there's so much to your story, but we're just going to hone in on that today and come into the book, because you said something very interesting in your bio, and you said that your message is based on two core beliefs, and that we all have a responsibility to double our talents, which I thought was very interesting. You're basing that on Matthew 25:15-19. And then also that life and death is in the power of the tongue, Proverbs 18:21. So now I want to look at the first part for a second, because that's a little bit revelatory for me, because we're so used to hearing this story about the talents, you know, the 10 talents and the person who had the one talent and they buried it. And we hear that in a religious context all the time, but you completely took it out of that and you're now bringing it in, into our responsibility as we live our lives to double our talents. So can you elaborate on that and tell us a little bit more about what you're teaching us there?
Well, to double your talent is to actually share what to share your lesson with others. And to by sharing your lessons with others, you encourage them to then share their lessons. So it's like a pay it forward effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so that one talent is now doubling to another group. Then when that group get it, it's going to another group. So you didn't triple that thing. So instead of allowing fear to make you bury it, just by sharing your lessons in life, just by sharing your battle, if you will, you are then doubling your talent. Some of us are authors. Some of us are inspirational speakers, singers. Just by sharing your story through that method, you're doubling your talent.
Mm-hmm.
So I create platforms, and I encourage people to make those things happen.
I've never thought of it that way, and I think that is a very precious way to see it, because when we just limit it to finances or things we feel we can do, a skill, we can easily make excuses. But if you have a smile, you can share that with someone else. You know, so there's no limitation here when you bring it into that context, that we all have something to share that will. And it, what you're talking about is also a mathematical financial principle. It's compound interest, in that,
uh-huh.
you know, all the insurance agents tell us that, you know, if you start early and you start pouring out early in that investment, that you will be able to glean more in the end than those who start later on in life. And so that's the other thing, too, people tending to wait so they think they've, you know, learned it all, or
mm-hmm.
they have no more sin or no more problems, and then they'll be able to speak into other people's lives. Does it work that way?
Oh, yes, that's good, Jackie. That's good. Yes, yes. Yes.
Right.
That's,
because
that's
we're never going to be perfect, right? And in fact, he starts us off in our broken place and starts asking us to share even while we're in our broken place, you know, because he knows our heart, he knows where he's taking us. So you can't even allow that to be a limitation. And going back to the same scenario in the book of Matthew, it's because the one with the one talent looked at God as being this hard taskmaster that he was fearful about using what he had, and he just buried it. And so we need to have a proper of the God that we serve, the Father that we have, because he really wants to double. He wants to bless. He wants to increase. That's his nature.
Yes. 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 And
it's
so you're right on point, especially where I am right now in my life. I'll tell people in a minute, I have issues. But that can stop me from sharing what I need to share with you. And then that goes back to my praying without ceasing, and I have to be in constant prayer because I have issues. So when I think about sometimes, because still flashbacks come. So if somebody look like him or smell like him, you know, that thought comes back. And so I want to address them like I would address him, okay? So I have to pray to keep myself in check because I got issues. So even in having my issues, I'm still able to be used by God because I'm able to share with somebody on how to press their way through this, that you too can get through it and get to the other side. So I can't allow my life lessons to stay with me. I have to share that thing so I can double those talents.
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's what this show is designed to do. It's designed for those who are reaching towards a dream while pushing away life challenges. They happen at the same time. There is no waiting for a calm moment. Life is never that still. So we have to be able to do both, move forward and push away at the same time. So I love that. Now, the second half of your core belief is life and death is in the power of the tongue. And my kids who are now in their 20s can tell you I've said that to them many, 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 many times. So now let's get into what you say matters. It's a 30-day guide that will actually help parents with their kids. Explain how.
Well, it's first of all, the teacher must learn the lesson before they can teach it. So, or be exposed to the lesson before they can share it. And so when the parent or the child reads it first, it cuts. It teaches. So before they can share it together jointly, there is already a preparation phase that takes place. So let's say it's a child that's 20 that read the book first and then decides to share it with the parent. That child first sees that lesson in that perspective, and then there's activities in there to share. So then they get to apply the lesson. So it's almost like repetition is how we learn.
Mm-hmm.
So when you read it, then you apply it. There is a repetitive method there so that it'll stick.
The repetition is very important. Yes, the repetition is very important because sometimes we learn skills, we try it out, we say, oh, it didn't work, and we just give up. So you're saying we really need to stick to it and make it a part of who we are, part of our regular practice.
Right, but it's more to it than just reading it. There's activities in there so that you can apply it. See, oftentimes we read support books, but we don't apply it. We just read it and store it in our memory bank, but we never put the application.
Right.
So knowledge is power if applied appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
Just store knowledge.
Power. Yeah. Apply.
Knowledge is power if applied, right. But just
you
store it up
apply.
Knowledge is just stored knowledge, right.
Collecting cobwebs and taking up storage space in your brain, but not actually being able to change your life and change your world. You know, I live in New York City. I'm in the Bronx, and, you know, there's all types of people in all walks of life here, and I get to see all kinds of conversations between parents and children, and I have my own challenges, even with my own. There's definitely little regular pitfalls I can fall into with different ones depending on what each of the triggers are. But one of the things that I notice with parents of young kids, toddlers to elementary school, is really without realizing it, putting kind of brackets on their perimeters of who they can be and how far they can go. The don't factor is very high. I hear a lot of don't do this and don't do that, and very little of forming language in a way that will show the child all of the possibilities that are there. So what are some of the things that you tend to see as being the most common mistakes that we as parents make in our communication with our kids?
The most common mistake that I've seen and I've experienced is quantity versus quality. We get so caught up on how much time we're spending with them, but not the quality of time that we're spending with them. So, and for example, when you're a startup entrepreneur, still working your 9-to-5, plus maybe even married, plus probably in some community things or active in your church, plus being a parent, and then add on it maybe a parent to two different levels of children, two age groups. That could be a very complicated life. And so to give it quality is when you have the exchange with the child, it is something of value. not just taking them to the grocery store with you to say that you spent time with them. You were shopping. You were involved in your getting to where you had to go, not so much as involved in getting to know the child being present in your meeting. You didn't talk to that child. You didn't spend time with that child. The child was just in your presence. So there's a difference. And so now, because we're so busy, we put more value on the quantity of hours that we spend with the child versus the quality of time that you spend with the child.
Very
and that can
point.
Be, yeah, that can be young age to adult.
I see it a lot with the digital devices. You know, of course, I'm, you know, in an age bracket where we didn't grow up with that, right? And so what I'm seeing is kids getting picked up at the end of the day. They're excited to see their parents after a long day. They're sitting on trains and the buses, and the parents are in their phones looking at Facebook and social media, and they're not engaging with their children. They're not talking. They're not having the conversation. And it does send that silent message of these things are more important than I am, and my voice doesn't count, you know, or you don't really love me or you don't really care. That's not what the parents are trying to relay. They've had a long day. They're tired, so they're just trying to, you know, blow off some steam themselves. So how would you, you're speaking to a parent, you know, say it's a single mother, she's picking up her kids at the end of the day, she's fried, but they're full of energy. What are some of the things that she can do, especially in commutes and transit, that's time that could be well spent? What are some things she can do in terms of communication and engaging and making sure she's saying the right thing? Or he, because it's not just about the women, it's the men too, yes.
Right. They have to come to an agreement of a mandatory at least 10 to 15 minutes time to speak. No TV, no telephone, no radio, no outside interaction, just our conversation. And so it's like mandatory quiet time. My girls and I used to do mandatory journaling time. So we had to be in each other's presence with no outside interaction. And then we were able to then discuss our day and then journal. So that gave us time to think about what we had to say, think about how we wanted to share it. But it gave you time for your mind to slow down and to put away all the outside.
I like that.
And that's setting boundaries. Right, and that's showing the child how to set boundaries.
You know, the journaling piece is very important on many levels. When you talk about being able to get your emotions out, having clarity of your thoughts before you actually say them, there's so many benefits to the journaling piece. And so that's built into What You Say Matters. It's actually a part of the book.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes.
I like it a lot.
It's your reflection time. If we have so much chatter that goes on in our head that we don't have a chance to sit down and really horn in on the voice that need to be heard. So only in your quiet time are you able to write those thoughts out. And so in your writing, you get the opportunity to make it plain. And so and Habakkuk 2:2 said, write the vision and make it plain. You cannot make it plain if it's all running around in your head, plus Facebook, plus Instagram, plus Snapchat, plus, you know, the television. So it's not plain.
I get it. I absolutely get it. You know what? Our time has flown by this evening, and it seems like we're just beginning to squeeze out the good juice. Can you tell people how they can get a hold of you and get a hold of your book as well?
You can contact me through herleneancar.com. That's herleneancar.com. You can go to my store, get my books, cards, T-shirts. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Herlene Ann Carr.
Thank you so much for sharing with us. I'd like you to impart a final word before we close out tonight, I want you to speak to that 20-something young man or woman out there who they don't yet know the full capacity of the queen and the king that's inside of them. They've had words spoken over them and said to them that they have distorted that true identity. Can you speak to them, and what would you say to them knowing what you know now?
Flaws and all, keep pressing forward. I need you and your lessons, because your lessons can be the balm that I need. So you didn't go through your lessons just for you. Your lessons were put in place for you to share with somebody else. The tears that you're crying are the tears for someone else. And there's greatness inside you. We want to hear it. You have a voice. Life and death is the power of the tongue. Speak life. Share your lessons.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. You can rise up and you can change. You can change the circumstances just through the power of your tongue and the things that you say. The God who we are talking about created us, created this whole universe by speaking it into existence. And you can be mindful of what you say about who you are, who he says you are. And if you align yourself up with that, you'll have all that Herlene is sharing with us. Thank you so much for being my guest tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. This is very wonderful.
Wonderful, wonderful. This live show will turn into a podcast, so the very same link will continue to be live, and you can come back and listen or share it with a friend, pass it on. It's not going to go anywhere. And so that we can do exactly what Herlene encouraged us to do, and that double our talent by sharing the gifts that we have, and this is a way to do that. So until next week, I want you all to continue to be your very own best hero, because the greatest hero of all said that you were worth it when he gave his life for you on the cross. Until next time, don't give up.
Do I have any worshipers in here tonight? Can you do me a favor? Can you stand up on your feet? I know you've been sitting all night. But come on, everybody that's at a table, can you stand up on your feet in the balcony? Come on, everybody. We came to worship him tonight. So if you can't, can you lift your voice and just make